something from this morning's class? It's hard to go there fast, isn't it? It had to do with the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even the fifth canto. Perhaps something due to about Zara Bharat even. I don't remember anything. Oh, and we're going to get more too. There's a whole another chapter of it. Yes, but who's the king who asked for something simpler? Parikit Maharaj. Because Jagbharat leaves. He just gives his instructions and then he immediately leaves. Quite amazing. He's a completely detached individual. He does not want to get entangled in any relationship. He gives the charity that he's going to give and doesn't stay around for the applause or to get anyone to express their great appreciation. He wants to go because he's internally satisfied and he has his own mood and his own mission. He just leaves. And therefore, King Parikit told Sukadeva Goswami in the last text 26, asked for the direct meaning of this allegory. For the direct meaning. Now, here's one question. We've been talking about the direct meaning ever since we began the last chapter. So why does Parikit Maharaj ask for the direct meaning of these things? Well, we already know it. What's the answer to that? Yes. Yes. Prabhupada has explained so many of the points in his purport. And much of that actually comes from this 14th chapter, which is Sukadev's explanation to Maharaj Parikit of the direct meaning. So it's going to be things that we've already heard. So we'll begin, in any case, we'll begin with the first verse. And it's a really long verse, a long prose verse. When King Parikit asked Sukadeva Goswami about the direct meaning of the material forest, Sukadeva Goswami replied as follows. My dear King, a man belonging to the mercantile community, Vanik, is always interested in earning money. Sometimes he enters the forest to acquire some cheap commodities like wood and earth and sell them in the city at good prices. Similarly, the conditioned soul, being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit, trying to gain something for himself. And again, this is the essential cause of the essential cause and also the essential result of our being in the material world. We are self-centered and therefore extremely dissatisfied due to this self-centeredness. So the cure of this, for this, is to put Krishna in the center. But very often, one has to get frustrated with his attempts to enjoy in the material world, to seek out his pleasures in the forest of material enjoyment. One has to get frustrated with that. And this is what we're hearing about, because otherwise we don't withdraw, we don't pull back. So he's being greedy, the conditioned soul being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit. Gradually he enters the deepest part of the forest, not really knowing how to get out. So we get in, but it's very difficult to get out. And no one, practically speaking on their own, knows how to get out. Having entered the material world, the pure soul becomes conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is created by the external energy under the control of Lord Vishnu. Thus, the living entity comes under the control of the external energy, Devi Maya, empowered by Krishna. It is divine, this Maya. and therefore is insurmountable. We get in, and it is so difficult to get out. It is so complicated and complex and entangling. Living independently and bewildered in the forest, he does not attain the association of devotees who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. Once in the bodily conception, he gets different types of bodies, one after another, under the influence of material energy and impelled by the modes of material nature, sattvagun, rajagun, and tamagun, impelled by these powerful forces, pushed and forced to take one different body after the next based on desires. The desires fill our consciousness under the control of this Devi Maya. In this way, the conditioned soul goes sometimes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to the earthly planets, and sometimes to the lower planets and lower species. Could you put this a little lower, please? Talking about lower. Yes, thank you. So earthly planets, mixed happiness and distress. We only want the happiness, but we get the distress. No one wants the distress any more than someone wants. Anyway, we get it. We get the distress. It comes along with the happiness like the tails of a coin comes along with the heads. It is just the same. It is the part of the same thing. Sometimes earthly planet, depending upon the modes. Sometimes heavenly planets. And in the heavenly planets, we shall hear about, because if some people would think heavenly planets, what would that mean? It means you can, when you go to rent your videos, you don't have to pay anything for the videos that you're renting, something like that. Or you have a credit card and you can buy whatever you want, but there's no credit limit and you never have to pay it back. So you can enjoy the senses in the same gross way that we enjoy now. But this is not at all what the higher planets are like. Heavenly delights aren't more of the same. They're not more of the same as the gross delights of the earthly planet. Rather, everything is far more subtle. Far, far more subtle. On Earth, there are people who like to go to the heavy metal rock and roll concerts, and the music is so loud, and certainly they get some pleasure from that. And then there are others who go to the concerts of the greatest of the concertos of the Bach and Mozart, etc. And who else?
Vivaldi.
Rachmaninoff. Very dramatic. But this is musical pleasure, but it's on a completely different level. And the people who are gross, they couldn't even consider going there. What would you do for those couple of hours in there? There's nothing to do. So boring. It's subtle. Like there are people who their favorite foods will be to go to a horrible fast food restaurant and just gorge their mouth and just fill it up. And other people, they couldn't consider even eating that kind of, they couldn't even look at it, practically speaking. They would get sick just looking at it. So are the pleasures, even on this planet, are all on the same, are they on the same level? No. What to speak of the subtleties on the higher planets? What to speak of the subtleties of the highest planet? It is based these on the higher planets. There is a depth of peace born of the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, one's enjoyment, the capacity for enjoyment is actually so high, and in the mode of passion, what to speak of the mode of ignorance, the capacity for enjoyment, the actual pleasure, is so low, like a pig. He's convinced when he's in the sewer with his snout in the most horrible of substances, he's convinced that this is heaven. This is pleasure, but it's pig heaven, hog heaven, as they call it. Lowest of modes. So this is not what the heavenly planets are like. What to speak? What to speak of the spiritual world based on love for Krishna, which has nothing to do with the material energy? Nothing at all. It is inconceivable. Srila Swami compares the heavenly pleasures with Brahmanda. Brahmananda, you can't times it. You can't times it. But the electricity works better there, for sure. In the spiritual world, there's no need for sunlight or moonlight or electricity. That in of itself is a reason to go. So, even the highest planetary system's pleasures, it is nothing. If we times that by a million, and then times that by a billion, and then times that by another billion, it is incomparable to the spiritual pleasures, which are just simply on a different level. So in the material world, heavenly pleasures, hellish existence, medium mix, up and down and up and down. And this is all due to the mixture of the modes and that which impels the living entities. Thus he suffers due to different types of bodies. These sufferings and pains are sometimes mixed. Sometimes they are so severe, and sometimes they are not. These bodily conditions are acquired due to the conditioned soul's mental speculation. Mental speculation, Srila Prabhupada means by that in his translation. Mental speculation is what he's thinking is going to make him happy. It is just his mind, again the same point, just trying to imagine with the mind what's going to give me pleasure, while in fact nothing on the material level can satisfy the soul. So using the senses under the control of the external energy maya, the living entity suffers the material conditions of material existence. I forgot a line. He uses his mind and five senses to acquire knowledge, and these bring about different bodies in different conditions. Using the senses under the control of the external energy maya, the living entity suffers the miserable conditions of material existence. He is actually searching for relief, because suffering, when one is suffering, all one can think of is getting free from that suffering. And when one has enough experience of suffering, even when one is in a pleasing circumstance, one will think, when will this end? It's going to end soon, and some more suffering will come. So that, the anticipation of suffering, even while in a pleasing circumstance, is another kind of suffering, another type of anxiety. So everyone is searching for relief, but everyone is generally baffled, although sometimes he's relieved after great difficulty. Struggling for existence in this way, he cannot get the shelter of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in the loving service of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Tell me something interesting about comparing the pure devotees to bumblebees, especially after just seeing what Jad Bharat did. Nasinga Devi. They're very unpredictable too. They're impelled by whatever impels them. They fly a bit here, and then they fly a bit here, and then they go back here, and then they go there very quickly. They move in their own way. They're impelled by something quite different that impels us. They're impelled by the inspiration of Krishna, so therefore from our point of view, very unpredictable. So Jadabharat somehow, by Krishna's inspiration, appears before King Rahugana, because he needs a palanquin carrier, and suddenly this exalted soul who's hiding his true nature is there in the association with the king. And then Jadabharat, due to qualities within the king and also due to his own free will, he decides to chastise him and preach to him. And then boom, he's gone. Finished. But lava matra sara sanga sarva siddhihoi. Something is planted within the heart during that time. And the taste of that which is planted coming from the heart of Jadabharat is of such a different quality than the pleasures, the kingly pleasures that he has previously tasted, that he wants more. He can't stop from pursuing that, even though spiritual life in its own way is so difficult. There is an old Buddhist saying, I shouldn't quote too many Buddhist sayings, but here's one, that it is better not to begin spiritual life because it's so difficult. But once having begun, it is better to complete it. Because you really don't have any choice, practically speaking. And the problem that we try to run from, the obstacle that we have to surmount, or the obstacles one after another, even if we try to run from them in our own way, they will follow us. And everywhere we look, even though we may try to keep our head down and not look at anything, it will follow us in its own merciful way. Because Krishna doesn't forget any service ever rendered. So this is wonderful. So the pure devotees are like bumblebees engaged in loving service. And they are only interested in a special type of pollen. They make their honey, their sweet honey, out of that substance. They have no interest in the material world. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The most important information in this verse is Hari Guru Charana Aravinda Madhukara Anupadhavim. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities, and sometimes they're relieved after great difficulty. On the whole, this conditioned soul is never happy. He simply struggles for existence. Prahlad will later, when we are discussing the different parts of Bhumandala, Prahlad Maharaj will give a verse that talks about the struggle for existence. That is life. The struggle for existence. Actually, his only business is to accept the spiritual master, the Guru, and through him he must accept the lotus feet of the Lord. This is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. People struggling for existence in the forest or cities of the material world are not actually enjoying life. Do you accept that? You consider. Very important to not think, only if I would have taken a different turn, I could have enjoyed like them. They are simply suffering different pains and pleasures, generally pains that are always inauspicious in the sense that they lead to further and deeper pain, because the happiness of those in the lower modes is dark, it is deep, it is ignorant, which leads to deeper and darker ignorance. They try to get release from these pains, but they cannot due to ignorance. They try to take shelter of more ignorance. For them it is stated in the Vedas, Tad Vigyanartam Sagarum Eva Bigat Chet. When the living entity is lost in the forest of the material world, in the struggle for existence, his first business is to find a bona fide guru who is always engaged in the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. After all, if he is at all eager to be relieved of the struggle of existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. Today, nowadays, those who are spiritually inclined, there's a big tendency, even in the West now, that those who are spiritually inclined, they almost are always influenced by the impersonal philosophy. And of those, there are two groups: those who are influenced by Advaita Vedanta and they have their roots in India, and there are those who have broken away from that side and want to take away all the different, any different cultural trapping from their search. So the first group, they want to accept a guru, and the second group, it's always you are your own guru, and you don't need a guru. This philosophy also came from India. Impersonalist gurus started this. You don't need, because there is no guru. Because, does anyone know why there's no need for a guru?
Because I say so.
No. Because there is no. No. Because there is no teaching. There is no need for a guru because there is no teachings. It is what it is. Huh? Excuse me?
Teachings.
There are no teachings because all this you see here is illusion. And if you just find your true self, which is already there, then all this illusion will vanish. No teachings, just find your true self. So even this simple point in Kali Yuga that you need a teacher is being taken away by different varieties of impersonalists in different ways. But most of them, even though they say you are the teacher, they don't mind accepting your money. This, they don't mind. So, if one is eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. Since the material world is compared here into a forest, it may be argued that in Kali Yuga, modern civilization is mainly situated in the cities. A great city, however, is like a great forest. Actually, city life is more dangerous than life in the forest. If one enters an unknown city without a friend or shelter, living in that city is more difficult than living in a forest. There are many big cities all over the surface of the globe, and wherever one looks, one sees the struggle for existence going on 24 hours a day. In a city like New York or Hong Kong, all night long, the lights are on, and the asuras are out doing their horrible all night long in Hong Kong. We hear screaming all night long. All night long. The traffic is going, there are people on the streets screaming. Terrible. And this is the enjoyment of these people. If this is their enjoyment, you can imagine what their suffering is. People rushing about in cars going 70 and 80 miles an hour, constantly coming and going, and this sets the scene of the great struggle for existence. One has to rise early in the morning and travel in that car at breakneck speed. What a word. Breakneck speed, because if you have to stop it, it will break your neck. There is always the danger of an accident, and one has to take great care. In his automobile, the living entity is full of anxieties, and his struggle is not at all auspicious. Apart from living human beings, other species like cats and dogs are also struggling very hard, day and night, for existence. Thus the struggle for existence continues, and the conditioned soul changes from one position to another. For a while he's a child, but he has to become a boy. From a boy he has to change into a youth, from a youth to a manhood, an old age. And if you, sometimes I ask children, what age would you like to be? And if they're 9, they say 11, and if they're 11, they say 14. And if they're 15, they say 18. If they're 18, they say 21. And if they're 21, they say 25. And then at some point it starts going backwards. When it's 29, they say 25. When it's 34, they say 29, like that. But one thing is clear. Everyone wants to be a different age than they are of their body. Because they're looking at someone else and thinking, oh, he has something I don't want. Excuse me, that I want. And only if I could have that, I could be like that. The happiness in the material world is anticipation, a later point of happiness. And at the present, there is the struggle for existence. Finally, when the body is no longer workable, he has to accept a new body in a different species. Giving up the body is called death, and accepting another body is called birth. The human form is an opportunity to, and here's what the human form is actually meant for, and there's one particular word. It's to take shelter. This is the opportunity. To take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the Supreme Lord. So it's not just accepting a spiritual master, it's taking shelter of a spiritual master. And through him, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. He is a representative of the Supreme Lord. The Krishna consciousness movement has been started to give an opportunity to all the members of human society who are misled by foolish leaders. No one can get out of this struggle for existence. And what are the foolish leaders telling everyone? Is that happiness is on the material level, on the sensual level. And by accumulating this and getting that and manipulating this, then you'll be happy. And this is economic development. This is especially the principle that guides the society nowadays. This is the prime principle. The problem, they think, is lack of economic development. So no one can get out of this struggle for existence, which is full of miseries, without accepting a pure devotee of the Lord. The material attempt changes from one position to another, and no one actually gains relief from the struggle for existence. The only resort is the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the lotus feet of the Lord. 2. In the forest of material existence, the uncontrolled senses are like plunderers. What do they plunder? What do they steal from us? The uncontrolled senses.
Our
Pure consciousness? What else?
Spiritual essence.
Yes, yes.
The duration of life.
Our life, our time. And they fill our consciousness and they plunder our life and our good karma. Whatever facilities we have, they take away. The conditioned soul may earn some money for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. This was a point that Prabhupada was very strong on. Money is meant for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. But unfortunately, the uncontrolled senses plunder his money through sense gratification. The senses are plunderers because they make one spend his money unnecessarily for seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, hearing, desiring, and willing. In this way, the conditioned soul is obliged to gratify his senses, and thus all his money is spent. This money is actually acquired for the execution of religious principles, but it is taken away by the plundering senses. Prabhupada says in the second half of the purport, this Krishna consciousness movement is therefore teaching people to control the mind in five knowledge-acquiring senses by a definite process. One should practice a little austerity and not spend money on anything other than the regulative life of devotional service. The senses demand that one sees beautiful things. Therefore, money should be spent for decorating the deity in the temple. Similarly, the tongue has to taste good food, which should be bought and offered to the deity. The nose can be utilized in smelling the flowers offered to the deity, and the hearing, the sense of hearing, can be utilized by listening to the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. Please, let us all listen to the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra by first vibrating the entire Hare Krishna mantra. Ready? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this way, the senses can be regulated and utilized to advance in Krishna consciousness. Thus, a good position might not be spoiled by material sense gratification in the form of illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. One spoils an opulent position in the material world by driving cars, spending time in nightclubs, or tasting abominable food in restaurants. In this way, these ways, the plundering senses take away all the assets that the conditioned soul has acquired with great difficulty. My dear king, family members in this material world go under the names of wife and children, but actually they behave like tigers and jackals. A herdsman tries to protect his sheep to the best of his ability, but the tigers and foxes take them away by force. Similarly, although a miserly man wants to guard his money very carefully, his family members take away all of his assets forcibly, even though he is very vigilant. Every year, the plowman plows over his grain fields, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seed lies there and, not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, the Grihastha Ashram, family life, is a field of fruit of activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nevertheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruit of activities are not destroyed. And the process of knowledge is insufficient to destroy the desire seed sitting in the heart. And this comes out in the next canto after Sukadev Goswami answers the question by Prakrit Maharaj about how to save one from hell and suffering, the reactions to all the terrible things that one does. He answers by the process of jnana. And what is that compared to? By Sukadeva. Huh? Yes, but what kind of a plant? Bamboo. What is it? Guli something. Because if you know how a bamboo, it has roots that are under the ground, and the bamboo comes up very thin, but when there's water, these bamboo roots, they're like concrete under the ground. They grow and cross grow. They're so strong and they're so deep and powerful, and it's so difficult to get them out. So you cut down the bamboo, you burn the bamboo, you burn the leaves, you burn the shoots, and these incredible roots are still there. So similarly, it is insufficient just to stop engaging in fruitive activities, in family life activities. The root has to be taken out. And therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, first he describes jnana in that way, like cutting or burning the bamboo, but then he changes his analogy when describing how bhakti works in the holy name. To niharam eva bhaskaram. Like the fog is dissipated by the sun. And when the sun in the morning comes up and there's fog, it completely takes away the fog. And there's nothing left. There are no roots of the fog left. So this is bhakti. And then to explain how powerful bhakti is, Sukadeva will tell the story of Ajameel and how powerful the holy name is in purifying the heart. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruit of activities are not destroyed, and like the bamboo, they will come up again and again. So therefore, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Did everyone hear that? Unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, no self-interest, selfishness can remain. No false ego. Because as long as there is false ego, there'll be selfishness. And as long as there is selfish, self-centered activities, material desires will come to the heart. Even up to the point of wanting to become one. Of a Shuddha Buddhaya, wanting to become one with the Supreme. A Maya-influenced desire, false ego-influenced desire. Anything but become a servant. Even after the desire for family life continues, even after one has taken sannyas. Sometimes in our society, ISKCON, a person out of sentiment may take sannyas, but because his desires are not burned completely, he again takes the family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. So at this point, while Prabhupada was writing the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there are many, many wonderful things going on in his society, his ISKCON society, but also Prabhupada has been experienced this already on more than one occasion. So to burn out all fruit of desires, because as long as they are there, the heart will never be peaceful, and as long as the heart is not peaceful, it will seek in the material world to gratify itself. Therefore, Krishna Bhakta, what? Nishkam. Atta eva shanta. And he's nishkam because he has a deeper satisfaction because he's surrendered to the lotus feet of Guru, Gauranga, and Krishna. He's given his heart to Krishna, and therefore he accepts Gotripte Varanam Tata. But it can't be imitated. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord in devotional service. Fully does not mean externally only. It means fully. Fully means all the senses, the mind, the intelligence, and the sense of identification, emotions, everything fully in Krishna's service. Then one can be satisfied. Sometimes, text 5, the conditioned soul and household life, being attached to material wealth and possessions, is disturbed by gadflies and mosquitoes, and sometimes locusts, birds of prey, and rats give him trouble. Nonetheless, he still wanders down the path of material existence. So Judd Bharat has already diverted Maharaj Ahuguna from wandering in the path of material existence towards spiritual life. Because his mind is absorbed in these activities, he sees the material world as permanent, although it is temporary, like a phantasmagoria, a house in the sky. The illusion of forgetting, which is so easy to fall in the illusion of forgetting the actual nature of the material world. We sit in class and we'll hear what a terrible place the material world is. We'll hear about it and we'll hear about it and we'll hear about it and hear about it so much that we get tired of hearing about it, and then we walk out the door and 5 minutes later we forget. Sometimes in this house of the sky, Gandharvapur, the conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after the objects of the senses just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. Sometimes the living entity is interested in the yellow stool known as gold and runs after it. That gold is the source of material opulence and envy, and it can enable one to afford illicit sex, gambling, meat-eating, and intoxication. Those whose minds are overcome by the motive passion are attracted by the color of gold, just as a man suffering from cold in the forest runs after a phosphorescent glowing light in a marshy land, considering it to be fire. Sometimes the conditioned soul is absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments and getting a supply of water and riches to maintain his body. Absorbed in acquiring a variety of necessities, he forgets everything. He forgets everything, absorbed in just trying to get the what he considers the necessity of life. He forgets everything, especially and including his own death. And he perpetually runs around the forest of material existence. Running around in a forest is dangerous. Purport. As originally mentioned, a poor man belonging to the mercantile community goes to the forest to get some cheap goods to bring back to the city to sell at a profit. He is so absorbed in the thought of maintaining body and soul together that he forgets his original relationship with Krishna and seeks only the bodily comforts. Thus, material activities are the conditioned soul's only engagement. Not knowing the aim of life, the materialist perpetually wanders in material existence, struggling to get the necessities of life. Not understanding the aim of life, even though he acquires sufficient necessities, he manufactures artificial necessities and thus become more and more entangled. He creates a mental situation whereby he needs greater and greater comforts. Sometimes, as if blinded by the dust of a whirlwind, the conditioned soul sees the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada, bewilderment. Being thus bewildered, he's raised upon the lap of a woman, and at that time his good senses are overcome by the force of passion. He thus becomes almost blind with lusty desires and disobeys the rules and regulations governing sex life. He does not know that his disobedience is witnessed by different demigods, and he enjoys illicit sex in the dead of night, not seeing the future punishment awaiting him. All wrong that everyone does is witnessed, and future suffering awaits. And no one can avoid suffering from one's sinful reactions, because this is Krishna's law, and his law is unbreakable, not like the law of any country of this world. Because to make laws that are unbreakable, that no one can break, one's power has to be complete. So the governments of this world have limited power, and therefore their ability to enforce their laws is extremely limited. If you've ever ridden on an Indian train, for example, there's these rules, I don't know if they still have them, but there's these rules in the compartments, and if people followed the rules, it would be quite pleasant, but no one follows any of the rules. And the government doesn't enforce them. They can't. Krishna enforces the rules. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world. And he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed, and again he runs after material enjoyment, just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. Prabhupada's purport. The main disease in material life is the bodily conception. This is the major intoxication, the identification with the body. This is the disease to cure. Being baffled again and again in material activity, the conditioned soul temporarily thinks of the futility of material enjoyment. But he again tries the same thing. By the association of devotees, a person may become convinced of the material futility, uselessness of the attempt for material happiness. But he cannot give up his engagement, although he is very eager to return home back to Godhead. Under these circumstances, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, compassionately takes away all the material possessions of such a devotee. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham Anugraham Iharisha Tadanam Shanai, Lord Krishna says that he takes everything away from the devotee whom he especially favors when that devotee is overly attached to material possessions. When everything is taken away, the devotee feels helpless and frustrated in society, friendship, and love. He feels that his family does not care for him any longer, and he therefore completely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is a special favor granted by the Lord to a devotee who cannot fully surrender to the Lord due to a strong bodily conception. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ami vigya e morke visha kena diva. The Lord understands the devotee who hesitates to engage in the Lord's service, not knowing whether he should again try to revive his material life. After repeated attempts and failures, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord then gives him directions, and attaining happiness, he forgets all his material engagements. So Krishna, we may forget Krishna, but Krishna does not forget us. Sometimes the conditioned soul is very aggrieved by the chastisement of his enemies and government servants who use harsh words against him directly and indirectly. At that time his heart and ears become very saddened. Such chastisement may be compared to the sounds of owls and crickets. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life. But when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this life or the next. Because of this, he approaches the living dead who possess these things. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Do any of the Acharyas mention this living dead? Adi? Jivat Mriyamana. So those, I can think of one thing that Prabhupada said. I've mentioned this before. Yes. Yes. Yes, the materialists, the flapping dead bodies that we see just waiting. You know where that expression, a flapping dead body, comes from? When you cut off a chicken's head, although we don't like to speak about these things, it will run for some time and flap its wings. But how long will it run for without its head? It is just a matter of a short time. He's already dead. He's already dead, but he has a little flap and running left in his body. This is what's going on in the material world. Everyone is already dead with a little more flapping and running left in the body. So to take shelter of people like that, instead of taking shelter of pure souls, this is insecure shelter. What can a person who's, there's an English expression, you're running around like a chicken without it, with its head chopped off. Is there something like that in, Yes, something like that. It means just flap it, but there's can't be a purpose to it. There's no purpose. This is material life. Very difficult to have this vision because the consciousness that we have is not like Jadbharat's. Jadbharat was so determined, his realization was so deep that he refused. He could be insulted. He did not care. He could be praised because Maharaj Rahugani, he was the king. Previously, Jadbharat was being insulted. He didn't care. And then he was praised. He didn't care. He just didn't want to get entangled in material life anymore. So fixed in determination, so deeply realized. And therefore, we are hearing these things again and again and again, so that perhaps some deep realization comes to us as well. That yes, I too don't want to get entangled in material life in the sense of being an enjoyer. I may have so many responsibilities in the material world. I may fulfill those responsibilities. But without false ego, I want the shelter of Krishna. Krishna's devotee, spiritual master, Krishna. There is my shelter. I will not take shelter of the material energy. And sometimes for a devotee, he may desire that and give up the desire to take shelter of Krishna. And then Krishna will take away his chances, ruin his material life sometimes if they're an obstacle, so that he has no shelter. No alternative shelter. We like to keep alternative shelters just in case. Previously, to be a brahmachari meant no bank account, no alternative shelter, no just in case. They used to, in the early days of the movement, when a brahmachari had a bank account, they used to call it his bloop fund. Bloop fund. So when he was ready to leave. But the purpose again is to make Krishna one's full shelter. This is the surrendered position of life. And this is the secure shelter that the king asked about. He's a king. He has so much facility. But whatever he takes shelter of, whether it's strength, his armies, his treasury, whatever it is an insecure shelter. And what we need is a secure shelter, one that is always there. And that we hear about. Here, at this point, we're hearing about that which is not a secure shelter, that which cannot bring happiness, that which cannot bring safety, that which cannot bring security. When people are having difficulty, even devotees, but especially non-devotees, the first thing they do is count their money. That's what people do whenever there's difficulty. They check and see how much money they have, which means this is my security. And what is that kind of gold in its different form compared to here? Yellow stool. So this is trying to, something that's repulsive. This is, so the teachings here are trying to break our attachment to all different forms of material shelters. Such living dead are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Prabhupada says in his purport, the wealth and riches acquired through previous pious activities should not be misused for sense gratification. Enjoying them for sense gratification is like enjoying the fruits of a poisonous tree. Such activities will not help the conditioned soul in any way, neither in this life nor the next. However, if one engages his possessions in the service of the Lord under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, he will attain happiness both in this life and the next. Unless he does so, he eats a forbidden apple and thereby loses his paradise. So changing into the biblical metaphor. Lord Sri Krishna therefore advises that one's possession should be given to him. Yat karosi rashnasi, yat johosi didasi yat, yat tapasyasi kantayat, tat karusva manorpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. Material wealth and opulence attained through previous pious activities can be fully utilized for one's benefit in this life and the next if one is Krishna conscious. One should not try to possess more than one needs for the bare necessities. If one gets more than is needed, the surplus should be fully engaged in the Lord's service. That will make the conditioned soul, the world, and Krishna happy. And this is the aim of life. What is the aim of life? I'll read it again. That will make the conditioned soul, engaging everything in Krishna's service, the surplus of one's funds, etc. That will make the conditioned soul happy, the world, and Krishna happy. And this is the aim of life, to make Krishna happy. That is Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, to mitigate distresses in this forest of the material world, the conditioned soul receives cheap blessings from atheists. He then loses all his intelligence in their association. This is exactly like jumping in a shallow river. As a result, one simply breaks his head. He is not able to mitigate his sufferings from the heat, and in both ways he suffers. The misguided conditioned soul also approaches so-called sadhus and swamis who preach against the principles of the Vedas. He does not receive benefit from them, either in the present or the future. Prabhupada says in his purport about halfway, as mentioned before, the color of gold is compared to the will-o'-the-wisp, or yellow stool. Therefore, one should not be allured by gold manufacturing gurus, but should sincerely approach a devotee like Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat instructs Rahugana Maharaj so well that the king was relieved from the bodily conception. They've done all these the famous gold manufacturing gurus from South India. They've done so many exposés on that fellow. And a few years ago I saw pictures of him. He looks very, very, very old and wretched now. At least he did. And they have cameras. They had, because he produces like sweets and gold and this and that, and they had cameras secretly watching his right hand going underneath his table. They were showing this in Australia and pulling out different things and then going boom like that. But when someone has faith, and they've accused him of, people have said that, accused him of child molestation, horrible things. Horrible things. And when people have faith, I've confronted one person who had faith in that fellow. And he said, oh, he does that just so to those who are faithless will leave. I'm not like that. I have deep faith. So those who have come for cheap things, they'll leave. He just allows them to see these kind of things. So what can you do? So a guru is no bona fide spiritual master teaches you can be happy and you can make your place of happiness this world. This is the world to get out from. So a guru should be accepted as advised in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.21 Tasmad Guru Prapadyaita Gigyaso She Uttama. One should approach a bona fide guru to inquire about the highest benefit of life. Such a guru is described as follows. Sabde Pare Cha Nishnatam. Such a guru does not manufacture gold or juggle words. He is well versed in the conclusions of Vedic knowledge, Vedes cha savara ham eva vidya. He is freed from all material contamination and is fully engaged in Krishna's service. If one is able to attain the dust of the lotus feet of such a guru, his life becomes successful. Otherwise he is baffled both in this life and the next. In the material world, so it doesn't end here. The criticisms of the material world go on, because it is meant to enter deeply into our consciousness that this is not where we want to go. Even though we may have material desires, we should live as simply as we can, and even somewhat austerely, and not try to make our material desires blossom, and instead try to make our spiritual desires blossom. So although the blossoming of the spiritual desires is not spoken of very much in this particular section, it is implied by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master who is a servant of Krishna, who will engage us in Krishna's service, so we can serve Krishna, so one can love Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, give us knowledge of Krishna, experience of Krishna, and directions how we can develop love for Krishna. In this material world, when the conditioned soul cannot arrange for his own maintenance, despite exploiting others, he tries to exploit his own father or son, taking away that relative's possessions, although they may be very insignificant. So how cruel this world is when the nature of false ego is we are together. We are working together, but if there's a choice between me and you, I will always choose me. So the togetherness and the camaraderie is illusory, because the highest principle in the material world is false ego and selfishness. Ultimately, it is lust, not love. If one cannot acquire things from his father, son, or other relatives, he's prepared to give them all kinds of trouble. Purport. Prabhupada says, once we actually saw a distressed man steal ornaments from his daughter just to maintain himself. As the English proverb goes, necessity knows no law. When a conditioned soul needs something, he forgets his relationship with his relatives and exploits his own father or son. We also receive information from Srimad Bhagavatam, in this age of Kali, the time is quickly approaching when a relative will kill another relative for a small farthing, just the smallest amount of money they'll kill. Without Krishna consciousness, people will deteriorate further and further into a hellish condition where they will perform abominable acts. And the final verse we shall read. Do we read up to 14 or 15 today? Does anyone? 15. Yes? In this world, family life is exactly like a blazing fire in the forest. There is not the least happiness. Has anyone ever been in close proximity to a forest fire? Terribly frightening. Terribly frightening. Surrounded by this incredible heat, coming, approaching, there's nowhere you can hide, burning everything. Family life is exactly like a blazing fire in the forest. There is not the least happiness, and gradually one becomes more and more implicated in unhappiness. In household life, there is nothing favorable for perpetual happiness. Being implicated in home life, the conditioned soul is burned by the fire of lamentation. Sometimes he condemns himself as being unfortunate, and sometimes he claims that he suffers because he performed no pious activities in his previous life. Srila Prabhupada's purport, and this is the last one. It's quite short, the last one we shall read. In the Guru Vastak, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has sung, Samsaradava Nalalina Loka Tranaya Karuna Kanakanatam. A life in this material world is exactly like a blazing forest fire. No one goes to set fire to the forest, yet the fire takes place. Similarly, everyone wants to be happy in the material world, but the miserable conditions of material life simply increase. Sometimes a person is caught in the blazing fire of material existence, condemns himself. He condemns himself, but due to his bodily conception, he cannot get out of the entanglement, and thus he suffers more and more. So what keeps one in the entanglement?
Bodily
conception of life, the great intoxication. So we want to get a different conception of life, one as being the servant, Gopi Bharta Parakamalayo, Dasa Dasana Das. Great fun, huh? The forest fire of material existence. Enjoying the forest of material existence. Enjoying the forest fire of material existence. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Were you there in the first fire?
Which one? There's always fires in Perth because it's so dry in the summer.
No.
Terrifying though. Well, there's always forest fires in Perth and Australia in the summers. Very dangerous. You could be, in your wonderful house and everything, and then forest fire comes along and wipes out hundreds and hundreds of acres, and everyone, everything lost. Because people look at their house as a point of security. False shelter, another false shelter. Then how come there are so many people taking depression medicines? Their body, they have to tell it, but their mind refuses. It's too hard. even in the public schools, the children and you know, 10-year-old, 12-year-old children, there's so many of them that suffer in the West from mental diseases amongst the children in the 12, 14-year-olds in the school system. So many have mental disease already. Adi, did you want to? You find anything interesting? Yes. We are sometimes accused of being discouraging to the householders. I did try to make the point yesterday and today that the problem is a mentality. One can be in any circumstance, in an appropriate circumstance for one, and prosper in one's devotional service. But if one has a mentality of wishing to enjoy the material world, one will suffer greatly. So what needs really more than anything else to be adjusted is the mentality of I am the enjoyer, Ishwaraham. It's a aham bhogi. And if one supplants that with being I'm a servant of Guru and Krishna, and then find oneself an appropriate situation and an appropriate ashram for him, then one will be situated properly. But if one has an enjoying mentality, one householder life will entangle one. But from the other point of view, if one has an enjoying mentality, every ashram will entangle one. But the amount you can get entangled in householder ashram, one can say is a lot more. Did you want to add anything to that? I tried. This is essentially a section that criticizes material life. It doesn't really criticize devotees, practically speaking, because a devotee, regardless of his ashram, shouldn't be materialistic. These are the instructions, but it balances the devotees in the household ashram to make sure they don't go too far in taking care of their needs and forget about Krishna. Because I've seen with the devotees also that you can get so entangled because your needs become so great. It's not simple. Brahmachari life is simple, and therefore it's superior for that reason. But if one is not going to be a brahmachari, then one should live as simply as one can live and not artificially increase the necessities of one life. And the household is one of his prime duties is charity for that reason, because a householder devotee is because the tendency is to accumulate and always think you don't have enough. So therefore charity is the prime duty of the householder. Did you want to add more? Anyone want to speak the glories of Krishna conscious household life to balance out the discouragement for the poor householders? Very few are in this class, I noticed, though. Yes. This is very good instruction for the householders. Yeah, they have no mind to think of anything. And so much pressure on the poor children in the Indian school system. It's terrible, though. It's too much. They learn the cramming system because there's so many Indian children that they, you know, if they really take, you know, the ones who really succeed, they're so brilliant. But the rest of them have so much trouble. So many have so much trouble. So much trouble. Improper system, the Indian system of education. When the children are like 10 years old, they're learning physics, you know, heavy physics. Anyone want to add any more? Yeah. Therefore, we tried to say that this is really for materialistic people, not for devotees. But yet there's always the point to that the that that one should check if one is a wife, because Rishabh Dev Maharaj also taught that one's guru na sasyat, janani na sasyat, that one should be a guru from those positions. So one should not be a jackal, one should be a guru. So an honest person, when hearing these things, will check oneself and make sure that one doesn't act inappropriately. They're very valuable in that sense, to check oneself. But the another point is that devotees aren't supposed to be averse to the material world. And obviously so many of Mahaprabhu's followers were householders. They shouldn't be averse to the material world. And this type of preaching, which is somewhat jnana-y, teaches aversion to the material world. But that's to balance out the attachment that we tend to have to the material world. But really, a devotee accepts whatever position he's in and tries to use it in Krishna's service. But the hard part is just that, trying to use something in Krishna's service and not being maintaining a big false ego. So this is the real issue, the ultimate issue, is that we have to become servants, whatever situation we're in, whether we're householders or living in the forest or whatever, we should become servants of Guru and Krishna. This is the real issue. Yeah.
I remember when I was living at far in Brazil, we had one kind of plant, very small plants, but they used to cover big areas, extensions of, and we could not plant anything there. And this, we used to call this plant immortal because it was impossible to kill. If you take the plant, the roots stay down and come back. And it's even worse because the other parts, even if you cut many pieces and throw, they grow from each part of the plant. So it's very difficult. And they cannot burn because they are full of water inside. You can't burn. So
they are made to survive.
Yes, you cannot cut, you cannot burn, you cannot do anything. And the solution we found was first to cut all of them and put all together in one place, and then they are weak. They will come again, but they are weak because they are just cut. And then immediately plant something very strong in the place. Some kind of beans or vegetables which are strong and which have big leaves. And then they will grow together. And then cut again the bad ones, what's the name? Weeds. Then, because they are coming together, then we cut again and they become weaker, and the beans would spread the big leaves, and then they would die because they cannot get sun. So the way was by one side cutting, like cutting the desire, no? Like the jnana that helps us to give up material desire. And at the same time planting good things which will take the place and not allow them to come back.
Yeah.
Was a good analogy to
understand. Yes, very nice. So lots and lots of bhakti being planted and nourished. Okay, let's stop here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.